Hello and welcome again, once again, to Learning Digital Photography. I'm your host, Jason Anderson, and you're listening to episode number 57 of the Learning Digital Photography podcast. With me on the show today is Kevin Mullins from across the pond. Kevin comes to us from the UK. He's a very successful wedding photographer, and I asked him to come on the show to help talk about things like documentary style photography, approaches and techniques. So Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. It's been a while. We were talking before we started doing this recording that, you know, it's been a while since we talked a lot, and it was a good time to reconnect as any, so we figured to get this show together and get the perspective from the UK crowd.
Sure.
So it's definitely good to have you on the show. Well, the first question I wanted to ask you was, because you're more of a documentary-style approach, I know a couple listeners are going to have a lot of questions, and the first thing that comes to mind for me is, with a documentary-style approach to photography, you're not really posing shots, per se. You're pretty much capturing action as it happens, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So if you're doing, like, capturing action as it happens, do you pose people at all? Like, say you're in the church, like, right after the ceremony. Do you set people up for portraits in there?
Pretty much, I would say probably 80% of my weddings have some kind of formal photography. That's normally a handful of group shots, family photos, etc., things like that. Most of them don't really have posed kind of portraits as such, traditional kind of church shots and things like that. The group shots and any kind of formal stuff normally is done a bit later on in the day. You know, we try and do maybe 5 group shots. And that's it. So, you know, it's done in perhaps 10 minutes maximum.
Right.
And the rest of the day is purely documentary. And like I say, about 20% of my clients don't have any posed or formal photos whatsoever. So it's purely storytelling through images right the way through from bridal preparation through to kind of first dance in the evening, which is great. You know, they're my favorite types of weddings.
Right. And it's much more natural that way. You probably get less stiffness. Like I see in a lot of those traditional pose type portrait shots, everyone just looks so stiff and the smiles look so fake, and you can tell they're not really happy doing that kind of a thing. So
yeah.
I think that's probably why it's not as popular today as it used to be, because it's not as natural. It doesn't seem as appealing as it used to.
No, that's right. I think, you know, there's a place for kind of fine art, kind of fashion style wedding photography, and there's a lot of very, very good wedding photographers who specialize in that, and they're brilliant. And a lot of people want that, you know, and they wouldn't come for me for their wedding photography, but there's also a lot of people who want just kind of storytelling. They don't want the stress, they don't want the pressure,
right,
of the pose stuff. They want to spend as much time during their wedding day with their friends and family, you know, enjoying themselves and,
sure,
you know, kind of reaping the rewards of the money they've spent rather than
exactly
spending hours with the photographer.
Right, and that is quite a bit of money. And I know I probably shouldn't be calling it a party because my wife would probably kill me, but in essence, that's kind of what it is. It's like, hey, you spend all this money on getting a group of friends and family together. You want to enjoy your time with them. So, yeah. So when you do these group shots, then since they're not really posed, do you have like a checklist and say, hey, let's get all the bridal party together for a quick group shot, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, typically what would happen is I will speak to them kind of a month beforehand and just get these group shots sorted so we know who's going to be in them, the names of the people.
Oh, okay.
On the day, I'll take that list with me. So, you know, I don't want the bride and groom worrying about anything on the day in terms of the photography. So I'll have that list with me. I'll work with the best man or an usher. We'll get those people together. We'll snap the photos. And it's done. It's done, and it's done in kind of a few minutes, you know. And
right.
I'll look for the nice light. I'll look for a nice location. But, you know, I don't really need to go and scout out venues and all that kind of stuff. You know, the group stuff and the formal stuff is done really as a record of the people there that they want, the
right,
bride and groom want. And the rest of it is documentary photography.
And I like how you said that you had a list, like you had a checklist. It's like, okay, these are the groups that I know I need to get. You know, the bride and the groom, bride and groom and groomsmen, bride and groom, bridesmaids, everyone. And
that's
the parents or something like that, and you're done, so.
Yeah.
So is that pretty much standard? Do you get that same kind of checklist regardless of who your clientele is?
Yeah,
I do. The same groups. So I would say probably after a time then you probably get a pretty good feel for what most clients are going to expect of you in that vein, correct?
Yeah, pretty much. It's, you know, it's difficult these days. There's quite a lot of separated parents, groups of parents, things like that. So, you know, sometimes that's a little bit awkward. But yeah, it's generally, you know, bride and groom, bride and parents, bride and groom with, groom's party and bridesmaids. And that's it. Generally, you know, no more than five and we're done and we can get on with the rest of the day.
Right. Very cool. Well, I know the other thing that is big on documentary style photographers' minds is getting that, I almost want to call it like a sixth sense, because when you're a documentary photographer, you're capturing action as it happens. So it helps develop that sense of when something's about to happen. You know, yep. When you can see like a moment and you can anticipate that moment, it's like, ooh, this is going to be a great moment. Let me get myself in position. Is that something you can train up to? Like, you know, because I can imagine like a bride and a groom off with like a private moment where they're just having a quick kiss or a quick moment alone. Mm-hmm. Then being able to anticipate those kind of moments to capture them, because those are really the moments that I would imagine a bridal party would want, you know, the bride would want to hang on their wall to have their lives. So the question is, can you develop a skill to really anticipate those kind of moments?
I think you can to a certain extent. I over the years I've learned to kind of listen more. You know, I tend to spend a lot more time listening with my ears and, you know, I tend to shoot with both eyes open, so I've got peripheral vision around the viewfinder. So I can kind of, you know, I can often see other things happening just outside the frame. And this allows me to kind of focus on something that's perhaps I'm not going to take the photo of, but keep my eye on the thing I am about to take my photo of, and then turn around and shoot that, or, you know, move to the point where I'm going to shoot that. So it catches people, you know, without knowing that I'm about to take that photo. So yes, I think you tend to, you know, definitely tend to listen out for events going on around me, laughter. If there's laughter going on behind me and nothing's happening in front of me, then I'll turn around and follow that. You know, you can now also tell, you know, you learn through weddings what's going to happen throughout the you know, the period throughout the day. And
sure.
For example, little things like the speeches, quite often, you know, the most intimate moment of a speech is when the speech finishes and the father sits down and the bride will give the father a hug or a kiss, or the groom will give a knowing wink or nod to the best man who's just done his speech. That kind of thing happens pretty much every single wedding right after the speeches. So, you know, the speeches carry on and obviously they're great photos, but you know immediately after that they sit down that some interaction is going to happen between the two people involved in the speeches.
That's awesome.
So it's just knowing that those kind of things and keeping your ear to the ground and your eyes open and everything's going on, you know, and I think that is something you can kind of pick up. Yeah, definitely, you know.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I'd say that'd be a great tip for someone that wants to get into the wedding photography industry as a documentary style photographer, is to do that, to keep your eyes and ears open for those kind of moments, and learning from people that, like yourself, have been doing it for a while and recognize that, like you said, you know, there's certain moments after, because when, like you said, when everyone's making a speech, all the people are up there with their point and shoots of their own SLRs, and they miss the point right after, and that's where the professional comes in and can pick up on that moment and capture that quote unquote precious memory, so to speak, as opposed to the other ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. And you said you shoot with both eyes open. So are you more, do you switch eyes? Like, are you a left eye shooter or a right eye shooter, or do you switch between them?
No, I'm a right eye shooter, and this is only something I've been doing kind of for the last 18 months, really. I don't do it all the way through the day, but during kind of the busy parts of the day, kind of during the drinks reception and things like that, I'll tend to keep both my eyes open. Obviously, it's a little bit, it kind of brings in a little bit of a rangefinder effect, as you get kind of out of focus vision a little bit, but you know, you know what's going on in the viewfinder, and it just gives you that little bit extra going on the outside. It's not something you can do all the time. It's just, you know, for those particular moments, those particular parts of the day where it's getting busy and there's a lot of stuff going on and, you know, you're firing away, it's nice to just be able to have a little bit extra information just coming from outside of the viewfinder that you can pick up on. And like I say, it's a great way of, you know, of kind of fooling people, if you like, into thinking that you're looking at something else and actually you're about to turn around and take a photo of them doing, you know, the intimate kiss or whatever they're doing.
Right. I know a lot of sports photographers that also do that same thing, so they can see like plays developing to their left or to their right of, yeah. of where they are, knowing that's going to move into the frame eventually, and that's how they can anticipate when to trip the shutter. So a lot of sports shooters use that same technique. So it's good to know that that's also a useful technique to use in wedding photography, too. Yeah. So are you primarily using that technique regardless of which lenses you're using? Like, say you have – I'm assuming you run with two bodies, right?
Yeah, I shoot with a 1D Mark IV and a 5D Mark II.
Oh, that's another Canon shooter. Go Canon. I'm totally kidding for the listening audience. It's not about the gear. It's not about the gear. But anyway, you were saying you shoot with those gear with those two bodies. And what about lenses? What kind of lenses do you use?
I normally have on the 5D Mark. I normally shoot with two lenses through the day. Although you know that's not set in stone. It depends, you know, on kind of the size of the venue and all that kind of stuff. But I normally shoot with 35mm f/1.4, which sits on the 5D. On the 1D Mark IV. And I normally shoot with an 85mm 1.2 on the 5D Mark II.
Wow, those are fast lenses. You said 1.4 and 1.2 on them.
Yeah. yeah, they're great, great lenses. The 85mm is not the fastest at focusing, so if I'm using that lens, I tend not to do the kind of two eye approach. Really, you need to have a little bit more concentration on the point of focus with that.
Really? Yeah. I see. I didn't know that. You said the 1.2 doesn't focus very fast.
It's not a quick focus. It's a very fast lens in terms of light, and you know you're going to get a great depth of field with it. But in terms of actually focusing, the barrel of the lens is slow to focus.
I didn't know that.
You know, but it's a slow machine. But it produces beautiful results. Absolutely
yes.
Beautiful results. It's not a lens to use on fast moving subjects. So that's where the 35mm comes in, and you know they tend to be the two lenses I use. You know, for the last kind of five weddings, I think, and pretty much all the weddings I did through the winter, they're the lenses that I had on, and you know, haven't changed them. Other than that, I often use the 1.35 f/2 if it's a big church or something like that, and I can only shoot from the back. If there's rules from the vicar, etc., then I can use the 1.35. But I try and stay with the prime lenses, really.
So you prefer to move with your feet than with your zoom?
Yeah, pretty much.
And I think there's some value in that, especially if you're a documentary style photographer, because moving helps keep you, I guess, in speed with the action of the day or with the events of the day, rather than being stationary and possibly missing something. So.
Definitely.
I think that's definitely helped there. Very cool. Cool. So you had mentioned earlier that before the wedding, you actually get together with the bride and the groom, like, what'd you say, like a month beforehand?
Yeah, some of all of them I obviously speak to, or, you know, we speak over Skype or email, etc., a month beforehand, and we'll just go over the final points of the day, outlining little things like, you know, the best man's telephone number, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
So just a handful of questions and the group shots.
So is that where you would like establish a rapport with the clients to find out, you know, what kind of shots they want, you know, what kind of mood they're looking for the day? Is that like a consultation? How does that work?
Well, not really. I mean, some of the clients I would have seen before when they first booked. You know, typically my clients will book kind of between 12 and 18 months in advance. So I may have met them at the time when they booked. I'd say 50% of my clients, perhaps a little bit more, I never meet until the actual wedding day. So
really? Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, with the documentary style, it's, you don't need to really discuss things like style of shots and, you know, where's the best position to get the photos, etc., all that kind of stuff, because it's, you know, what I try and explain to my clients is I will tell the story of the day through the images. So, you know, if it's raining, it's raining, and that's going to be part of the story of the day. You know, it's not going to have an effect on where I'm going to go. You know, if the bride and groom go somewhere else because it's raining, then I'll go with them and I'll follow the action and follow whatever happens with the wedding. So I don't really need to kind of see them that much. But, you know, that's not to say that I don't. And, you know, a lot of them come to the studio and obviously look at albums and various things like that. And, you know, the odd one or two request engagement shoots and things, so, you know, which I'll do with them. But yeah, pretty much, you know, it's kind of 50-50. I come to the wedding and I've never met them before.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting, because from other wedding photographers, I've heard from them, from their perspective, and I guess maybe it depends on approach, but other people have said in the past that they like to establish a rapport with clients prior to the event, as far as knowing their personality, the types of shots that they're hoping for and looking for. But I guess what you're saying makes more sense, though. If you're a documentary, you don't really need to have that because it's more telling a story through the photo. So that makes sense. When you do meet with clients beforehand, though, do you get, like say you're trying to solicit a client or someone comes to you asking questions about, you know, the type of work that you do, and you know it's before they've actually committed to using you as their photographer for their wedding. What kind of questions do they typically ask you? So for someone who's trying to like get into photography, for example, how would you help prep them to say, be ready for these kinds of questions? Boom, 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 boom. Make sure you ask these kinds of questions yourself. Boom, 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 boom.
By far, the question I get asked the most, by far, is, do you do group shots? because I know it's odd, but my website, it's quite obvious why my website, you know, the style of photography I do, you know, you won't find any group shots or anything on my website. It's quite plain to the people that it's documentary approach. But I also explain on the website that, you know, I appreciate that most weddings need some kind of formal photography, you know, especially in the UK. It's ingrained in history that everybody has a kind of, you know, a photo on their sideboard of the day they got married kind of thing. So I know that people are going to ask that, and they always ask it, you know, kind of 95% of people ask that question. Do you do group shots? And, you know, and I always say to them, yes, I'll do them, you know, and we try and keep them down to about five. But, you know, that's a fluid number. If they've got a very large family, it can be a few more. You know, it's not something that I will kind of set in stone. But that's the question that they all ask, you know. And then kind of other questions are kind of what I class as silly questions, really. But to the bride and groom, I suppose it's not. You know, they ask things like, do you shoot in color and black and white? Do you have a color camera and a black and white camera? You know, and these guys, you know, they don't appreciate that everything's done in raw and digital and converted later. You know, and they ask questions like, you know, quite often I get, we really like your black and white photos, and, you know, is it possible to do an entire wedding in black and white? And of course the answer is yes. So, you know, that kind of conversation happens, you know, and it's good to be prepared for that kind of question, you know.
Sure. So what about questions that you ask? Like, what kinds of things do you, or I guess if you do, because it sounds like from what you had said before that you don't really often, well, at least about half the time, you don't even meet the bride and groom before the day of the wedding. So you may not even ask many questions, but if you do have a need to ask questions of the bridal party, you know, prior to the wedding or day of the wedding or, you know, whatever logistical kinds of things that need to be addressed, what are the most common types of things you would ask as far as logistics go, just to kind of help other wedding photographers out there trying to learn to make sure they have all their ducks in a row?
Well, the things, in terms of physical aspects of the day, the things I always tell the client is that I have to be at the ceremony location, whether that's a church or a hotel, etc. I need to be there 45 minutes before it starts. So if they want me to cover bridal prep and there's a journey in between bridal prep and the church, etc., they need to take that into account. So, you know, I may spend half an hour or so with the bride and then a drive to the church. So, you know, that sometimes impacts on what they want to be doing when I'm there. I'll never dictate to them, you know, it's time to put your dress on, it's time to do this, you know, if you want photos of it. I will take photos of whatever's happening when I'm there. But that doesn't mean that if they know I'm coming from, say, 12:30 till 1, they can get themselves in a position where they want to be having their hair done, their makeup done, they're putting their dress on, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And then the other thing I kind of say to people is, you know, on the wedding day, I really want to be seen as a as an informal guest, really. You know, I sometimes ask people to say to their guests that they haven't even got an official photographer. So, you know, I try and blend in as much as possible. You know, I really try and get in amongst the action. So, if people ask me, you know, how do you know the bride and groom? And, you know, I'll just say, oh, I'm a friend, etc. You know, I often don't say I'm the photographer. So, you know, I try and encourage the bride and groom to tell their close family, especially parents, mothers, etc., that I'm a documentary style photographer, so they don't have any expectation for me to turn up at, say, bridal prep and start asking to move the dress in front of a nice, lovely window, etc., you know. So
I think, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. Prepping the parents is the most important thing, really, because, you know, quite often they will start asking, oh, when are you going to do the, you know, when are you going to take the formal photo of Uncle John and Auntie Maud, you know, etc. And of course, that's never going to happen. So. Yeah.
Not going to happen. Next question.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. Well, hey, since you are shooting with Canon gear and you mentioned the bodies that you have, do you ever use the video functions? Because I know there's been a lot of talk about the convergence between still and video, and some people are thinking that video is going to be the trend, the way things are going. Do you see clients asking for video components to the wedding? And if they do, is that something you're okay with? Do you offer that service? Is it, you know, what portion of your business is that if you do offer video?
I don't offer it. I have never been asked for it by a client. I've kind of toyed with it with some commercial work. I don't think it's anything I'm going to introduce anytime soon to my wedding business, purely because I shoot alone on the day, and I think if you're going to start doing kind of crossover convergence stuff, you need somebody else there with you to sort out the sound, to sort out the tripods, all that kind of stuff, you know. And I'm much more a, you know, two cameras, run around, you know, just get into the action. That's how I prefer to do it. So I don't think it's anything I'm going to start offering soon. If people start asking for it more, then perhaps I'll revisit that. But I've never been asked from a wedding point of view. There are some photographers over here, and I'm sure, obviously, well, I know in the States doing it as well, and doing a great job. But, you know, from a purely kind of documentary reportage point of view, it's not something I'm thinking about doing anytime soon.
I guess from a business perspective as well, that makes sense, is because that'd be that much more gear that you need to invest in for what sounds like no interest whatsoever at this point.
Yeah.
Because if no one's asking for it, why invest in the gear needed to accommodate that? So.
Correct, exactly. And you know, and all of the stuff that I do know about it is, you know, I've got two small children, so I do kind of use the cameras a little bit for filming them and stuff. But I know that, you know, the sound is probably the most important thing to get right. And, you know, that's why you see so many wedding videos that are, they've just overdubbed with music, etc. You know, there's no getting the sound right. And obviously the sound out of those cameras is not great. So you need third party right. tools and speaker microphones, etc. So it's just a big can of worms, I think. And, you know, it's not something I'm planning on doing soon.
That makes sense. That makes total sense. Well, and it sounds like that's also a part of the business side of things. And I know a lot of people say that when you're in a business as a photographer, you spend 10% of your time on the photography element, and then you spend 90% of your time running the business, whether it's marketing and advertising and promotion and, you know, making contacts and making connections. Does that same kind of thing hold true for a documentary style photography business?
Absolutely.
So you find yourself doing the same kind of things?
Yeah, for sure. I think 10% holding the camera is probably a bit optimistic. I think it's more like 5%, really. So
what goes on in a typical day for you in working on the business side of the photography? And I'm not including in this like post production, because I would still classify that as like the actual shoot. Like,
right,
10% of your time you're actually shooting it in post-production. The other 90% you're actually promoting the business and doing the business end.
Yeah, I think like a lot of my time is spent doing, you know, kind of marketing, replying to inquiries. I do get a lot of inquiries and stuff, and you know, accounts get, you know, I've got a workflow, so when a booking comes through, they get a nice letter with a package of information, they get a DVD of, you know, of work and things like that, etc. All that kind of stuff takes time to not only produce and keep up to date, but get out the door every time a wedding comes through. My wife works with me a little bit, so, you know, she's very good at kind of doing all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of social networking, meeting mm-hmm. vendors, all of that kind of stuff, keeping the website up to date, blogging, I suppose, is a little bit kind of, it's a little bit like the post-production, but it's, you know, that takes time. It takes time to get that right. Search engine optimization is a lot of time spent on that.
Sure.
You know, I don't do any kind of advertising as such, so it's all through the website and word of mouth. So getting the website right is important.
Right. And I think word of mouth, especially in the wedding photography industry, is definitely a big part of it, because that's actually how we got our wedding photographer hooked up when we had our wedding 8 years ago. say that authoritatively. Yes, it was 8 years ago. it was a referral, and I think it came from the reception place where we were going to have the reception, where they had a list of preferred photographers, and, you know, just alphabetically, we just picked one out and started calling around to find one that matched. Do you spend time developing relationships with vendors in that vein, like working with venues and working with, you know, floral shops and those types of other accessory needs that wedding planners, or I guess bride and groom, will talk to when getting their wedding prepped?
Yeah, definitely venues. Not so much kind of florists and dressmakers and all that kind of stuff. That's, you know, there's some merit to that. But, you know, I'm not really a flower and dress type of person. So I couldn't really probably have a comfortable conversation with people about, you know, about that kind of stuff authoritatively. So, but definitely the venues are really important. And this year I've got, there's a pattern of weddings that I have a handful of venues, and, you know, they recommend me, and, you know, and I'm happy to recommend them, and it goes from there, and, you know, they show some of my albums, et cetera, at the venues, and that really.
Oh, nice. Helps.
Yeah.
And I guess that's part of the business side of it, is getting albums and materials and promotional products over to the venues so they can say, here's our preferred wedding photographer list, and here's some of their past shoots that they've done on location here.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So do you find yourself competing with other photographers in your area at particular venues when people are looking to book a wedding? Like, are you on a list, or is it just each venue has its own preferred photographer? And, like, for Westminster Abbey, you know, it's Kevin Mullins. He's our preferred photographer.
I wish.
Well, I'm just saying hypothetically.
Yeah,
I don't know the specific locales. I just picked the big one, right? You know.
Yeah, no, it's true. They do kind of have a list. The big venues around my area tend to have a list, and there, you know, in fairness, there are the same, you know, few names appear on the lists, you know, regularly. It's, you know, in the UK, the wedding photography industry is very, very saturated. There's a lot of people doing it. And there, you know, in my area, there's quite a few documentary photographers too, but they're all very, very, very good. There's no, you know, I can honestly say that all of the people who specialize in documentary photography kind of in this area are just really good photographers. So, you know, we are kind of competing with each other, but at the same time, we network with each other. You know, we go out for beers and Christmas drinks and all that kind of stuff. And it's really important. If I'm booked, I'll send a referral their way and vice versa. So, you know, that all works. It all works really well.
And I think that's an important aspect of any genre of photography, whether it's wedding photography, event photography, you know, sports photography, whatever. If you don't network with other professionals in your area, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot.
Yep.
Because then they can't refer you because they don't know you, and likewise, you'll never be able to offer them anything. So it's important to network with others, even if they are, at least at one level, your quote-unquote competition.
That's right.
So, yeah, I think that's a very good tip. Do you have any other – these are some great tips. We should probably be putting these together in some show notes. So we'll get some show notes up on the show after this podcast comes down. So those will be included with the blog post, and we'll also have links to Kevin's site. Kevin, why don't you go ahead and let people know where they can find you online, and then we'll wrap up with a couple other quick tips if you can think of any in the last couple minutes here. So first off, where can people find you?
My website is www.kevinmullinsphotography.co.uk. And I am on Twitter at Kevin_Mullins and Facebook.com/KevMullins.
Kev Mullins, okay.
Yeah, Kev. Okay. And that's Mullins, which is spelled MULLINS.
And we will link to those in the show notes as well. So for those of you that are in your drive or your commute, don't stop to write those down. We'll definitely link those up in the show notes. And I guess to kind of wrap things up, I know we've been talking a lot about the different aspects here as far as how documentary style photography works, what the point of it is, telling the story and all that kind of thing. For someone that wants to become a documentary style photographer, do you have any final thoughts, tips, or suggestions on how to become proficient on this style of photography?
I think probably the most important thing is to have it right in your own mindset that what you're doing on the day is telling stories of you know, a really important event in people's lives. So, you know, the reason why I started down the documentary route was because, you know, I was looking at pictures that genuinely told stories rather than
fashion shoot images. You know, it was great. They were getting lovely pictures of their dress and their shoes, etc. But, you know, 20 years' time, they weren't seeing anything, any stories of the day. It was just stuff that they wore and they did and who was there.
The shoes.
Yeah, exactly, the shoes and stuff. And it's, you know, it's important to get that kind of stuff. But do it in a storytelling way, you know. You do it in context of other things that are happening. And, you know, if you have that in your head on the day that this is probably the most important event most people will go through in their lives, and they really want to look at this in 20 years' time with their kids and see a story and say, oh, look, I remember this happening. I remember, you know, when we cut the cake or something, I remember so-and-so taking that photo of us, and, you know, all this kind of stuff that's going on around them, and that touch with the bride and the father after the speech, you know, in years gone by, she'll look at that and hopefully still bring a tear to her eye, rather than just a picture of her in a dress standing at the top of a stairwell, you know.
Doesn't really evoke the same kind of emotion that a documentary style shoot would. So.
No, I don't think so. But
well, you know, I totally agree with that. I think most people would agree that documentary style photography is more evocative, or it draws more of an emotional response than a portrait style photographer would at a wedding.
Yeah.
Because it's you're capturing two different things. One, you're actually telling the story. Two, you're making note of the dress or the shoes or where they were.
Definitely.
Or who was there.
Definitely.
So I think that's a very valid point. So I guess I did have actually one other question for you. In going from beginning to the end, because you had mentioned where there was the bridal setup where the bride's getting dressed and having her hair and her makeup and all that stuff done, typically, on average, how long does it take for you to go from like beginning to end? Like, walk me through, if you could, briefly. And I know I don't want you to reveal all your, that, you know, everything all in one fell swoop. But if you could walk me through, on average, what happens on a typical shoot day for you? Because you said you go out, you look at the bride, and then set up shots there and go on from there.
If I explain what happened yesterday's wedding, because that was a very typical wedding. So I headed off to the bride's house, or bride's parents' house, which actually wasn't that far away from my own home. I got there at 12:30 in the afternoon. I spent half an hour to, I think, 45 minutes shooting the bridal prep stuff. And as it happened, it was perfect timing, because she was just getting into her dress when I arrived, and people were arriving, florists were arriving. There was a lot of stuff going on. So I spent 45 minutes or so there. I drive over to the church to make sure I'm there 45 minutes before the ceremony. Shoot the ceremony completely documentary style, so no stopping the ceremony, no kind of, you know, individual shots of the ring exchange, all that kind of stuff. It's as it happens. Right. And then from there, they typically spend kind of 20 minutes or so outside the church doing whatever they do best, celebrating, hugging, kissing, you know, confetti, etc. Over to the venue, which was about a 20-minute drive, for the drinks reception, and that's where we did the group shots, which were kind of four or five group shots, very quick. And then it was they then go in for their meal. I stop shooting when they have their meal. I take a break, you know, so I'll sit down for an hour and a half or 2 hours then. Then it's back into the room for the speeches, and then the first dance. So all in all, yesterday I started at 12:30, and I finished at 8:15 in the evening.
So you had about a full eight-hour day there.
Yeah, and that's average, but some of them are kind of 10, 11, 12 hours, and some of them are 6 hours.
Right, so I guess it probably averages out to about 7, 8, maybe 9 hours on average for a wedding shoot. And then what, as far as post-production goes, actually, before we get to that, I did have one other question. I keep on coming up with other questions here.
That's fine.
You mentioned you get to the ceremony locale 45 minutes prior. Like, you need to be there that much prior. What's that 45-minute time window for? Like, what are you doing during that phase?
There's a couple of things that I need to do. I give myself that window just in case of traffic more than anything. You know, it lets me get there. But if it's not a church, over here we have what they call registrars who kind of conduct the weddings. I need to make sure, speak to them, see them, make sure I'm kind of okay to take photos. Some of them don't allow it. And I also like to do kind of shots of the venue, of the guests arriving, all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
You know, so yeah. I fill that time with that, yeah.
Cool. Okay, and then I'm sorry. The other question I was going to ask was about the post-production side. Once you're finished with a shoot and you've gotten everything done and you get home and it's 8:15, 9 o'clock at night, whenever you get home, do you immediately take everything from there into Lightroom or Photoshop or Aperture or whatever you use, or do you let it sit for a day so that you can come at it fresh? So I know people that go both ways depending on how they best work. For you, how does what works best for you?
Apart from backing up the cards, which is done, you know, either that night if I go back to the studio or the next day, I won't look at the wedding images for 2 or 3 weeks. So
really? Wow.
Yeah, they stay there. I use Photo Mechanic to do the selections. I then use Lightroom and finally Photoshop. So my work...
You said you use Photo Mechanic?
Yeah, Photo Mechanic is a...
That's sick. Not heard of that.
Brilliant tool for doing selections. It's exponentially faster than Lightroom for selecting images. So, you know, I ingest the cards using that tool, so it imports my cards. And then I can just rapidly go through. It shows a quick preview of the raw files. It doesn't do what Lightroom does to slow it down by creating the JPEG previews, etc., all that kind of stuff. It's just so much faster. So that tool is used for the selections, and then I open those selected images in Lightroom and do my exposure corrections in Lightroom, and then every image is then run through a set of actions that I've created over the years in Photoshop.
Things that you apply to every image, whether it's sharpening or white balance corrections, noise reduction, that kind of thing. Do you use a lot of noise reduction in your post-production?
No, I add noise. I quite often add noise to my images.
I was just thinking with the 1.2 and 1.4 lens, there probably wouldn't be a lot of noise that fast anyway.
You'd be surprised, because I try not to use any flash at all. So apart from perhaps the first dance when it's often impossible not to, you know, I don't use flash at all. So, you know, I am shooting at very high ISOs sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so...
I wouldn't have thought that from your website, because I've seen a couple... shots from your website, well, maybe those are the few that do have flash, but I was just going to say, it looks like you're pretty well dialed in on how you're lighting your subjects.
I don't use flash. I haven't, like I said, apart from the first dance, I haven't used flash since, perhaps last winter. You know, I just don't use it. I've shot weddings over the Christmas period. I shot weddings that pretty much all of the shots were coming out at 12,800 ISO, using the 1D Mark IV. It's just a great tool, great camera. And you can shoot pretty much in the dark with the fast lenses. So, they're just incredible. They really are incredible pieces of kit. And
my brother has the 85 1.4. He let me borrow that over the holidays, and that rocked me back as far as its low light handling capabilities. I hadn't shot with anything that fast before, so then when you said they had a 1.2, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Can't even imagine how that would do. But you said that's a slow focusing lens, right?
It's slow to focus, yeah. But you know, once you hit the focus and it's, you know, it's dark, it's just great. It's a great lens. It's really good on the full frame body of the 5D Mark II. It's a beautiful lens because, you know, you get the lovely depth of field, and I try and shoot wide open as much as possible. So, you know, you kind of take three exposures with the 1.2 lens, and one of them might be sharp and the other two might be out slightly. So, you know, you do end up taking more frames with it, but, you know, it's worth it because it just produces really beautiful results.
Right. So is that what you do then? You do like a burst mode, like da da da, 1, 2, 3, real quick, and that way you know at least one will be sharp.
Yeah, with the 1.2, it can't really do burst because, like I say, it's too slow to do that. But if I'm taking a photo in a church, for example, where the subject isn't moving that fast, then I'll take three shots, you know, in rapid succession, just to make sure that one of them's in. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So I'm sorry I interrupted you, because you said you went from Photo Mechanic to Lightroom and then to Photoshop using Action. So it sounds like you're running almost the full gamut of software there when you do your post-production time.
Yeah.
How much time do you spend in post-production versus at the wedding shoot? You said you're shooting for, what, 8 hours on average? So how much time after that do you spend in post-production before a wedding is done?
I've
close the door on it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of I have edited a complete wedding in 3.5 hours.
Wow.
But, you know, the average is kind of a day and a half, I would say. Okay. And, you know, but don't get me wrong, this has taken quite a while to get this nailed. Photo Mechanic is only a recent addition to my workflow, and that saves me maybe 3 hours per wedding. It's just
wow, great. That's huge.
It's really worth people checking it out, and it's, you know, for selections, it's, you know, a lot of photojournalists use it because it's got great EXIF tools for, you know, for tagging and all that kind of stuff. But okay. In terms of speed of selecting images and importing, you know, it imports a lot faster than Lightroom as well. And, you know, it can do all the usual stuff that Lightroom can do in terms of backing up to separate folders, et cetera, at the same time. You know, it's just great. And then, yeah, Lightroom for mostly for exposure correction. I don't use any presets or anything in Lightroom. I just go through the images. Remember, the selections have already been done in Photo Mechanic, so the images I have in Lightroom I know that are the ones that the bride and groom would eventually see, so there's no kind of, I don't need to worry about deleting images or anything there, so I know that each of those needs to be exposure checked and corrected if necessary.
Right.
And then I go through and just select which one's going to be black and white, which one's going to be color, and then they go off and in an action, in my actions that I've built up over time, and away they go into Lightroom, and I normally run those over lunch or overnight or whatever, depending on how many images there are. So,
right.
So yeah, 3.5 hours is the fastest, and a better day and a half, I think, is the average. Yeah.
Average. Wow. So that actually is. It sounds like it's close to 3 days worth of work for one wedding, for one event.
Yeah.
And two and a half to 3 days.
That's just getting kind of the images finished. That doesn't include kind of albums and things like that. You know, that's getting the online gallery ready for the bride and groom to see.
Okay, so how much time does something like that take? So, like, when you go to say, okay, I'm done with this wedding, I've delivered the product, they bought the product, and then done, and you move on to the next event. How much time total would you say all in you spent on one event?
I would probably, on average, it's about 4 days, I would think, including album design, meetings, if there are any. Galleries, creating the DVDs, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So.
Do you do that kind of thing where you bring the bride and groom in after the event and do kind of a display of the shots of the day and present the album to them in like a studio type environment so they can really get the full effect? Or
I do bring them in, but I don't do kind of a slideshow of the images. They've seen the images before they come in. They are generally coming in to pick up their albums and DVDs, etc. And that's where we will talk about frames and things like that if they want to buy anything extra. But the images, they will have seen the images in their online gallery. That's where they see the images first. Yeah.
Oh, I got you. So you're doing an online proof gallery for them where they can see them online and then they come and pick it up that way. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's not really proof. The only images they see are the finished edited images. They don't kind of see a selection of images and then they select the ones that they want me to go and finish editing. They see, you know, the 200 images or so that they get at the end of the wedding. They're the ones they see. The only images they ever see are fully edited.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the online gallery is fully edited and obviously the ones that go into the album, etc., the same images that they've already seen.
So when you give them the final product where it's a DVD and a photo album, is the DVD something where they can take images off that DVD and put it up on their own Facebook page or do reprints from or anything like that? Or is it all just web-sized?
No, I basically give them full-res images, I give them Facebook-ready images, and I give them iPhone-ready images. So
The
high-res images, they can, you know, I retain the copyright, but if they want to kind of print and do that, that's absolutely fine. The Facebook-ready images, I have it in my contract that if they're going to put images on Facebook, they have to use the Facebook images I give them, and that has my little logo in the image.
Sure.
And then the iPhone ones, I just do that. As, you know, it's dead simple to do these things in Photoshop, so...
Yeah, you know, just set up an action, let it run through, boom, done.
Exactly, yeah. It's just a little bit of added value that they all seem to like, you know, so...
Well, I think that kind of thing that is especially valuable in today's day and age where everyone... Well, not everyone, but most people are doing some kind of social networking, whether they realize they're doing it or not.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking to a friend on Facebook, that's social networking. You're talking to a friend on Twitter, that's social networking. You share a picture, there you go, you're social networking.
That's right.
So excellent. Well, great tips here, great tips, and thank you so much for coming on the show. What we'll do is we'll get the links up for Kevin's website so you can go visit him, follow him on Twitter, do go check out his Facebook page, check out his website. If you have questions for him, stop by there and ask him, or you can write him through the blog as well. For those of you that haven't listened to the show in a while, because I know it's been a while since I've put out a podcast, and I'm trying to get more regular back into routine here. It's just tough. But anyway, if you're interested in checking out more podcasts and asking me some questions, you can contact me on my website. Jason@canonblogger.com is my email. Canonblogger.com is the website. The podcast you can find in iTunes, and we'll have links to all that in the show notes once this goes live. It'll probably be going live later this week, Kevin, so I'll get you an email prior to that with all the information.
Great.
Thank you, everyone, for checking in. Kevin, thank you again very much for coming on the show. I know it's been a while since we've connected, and hopefully we won't lose connection like we did over the past 6-12 months. It's been quite a while since we've talked to any great degree, so I appreciate reconnecting and coming on the show. It was great having you.
No problem. Thanks very much. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks. Well, and we'll talk to you again next time here at the Learning Digital Photography Podcast.